They're now cringeworthy, but racist Jim Crow era images were once common on products in grocery stores. At a time when African Americans were considered second-class citizens, Uncle Moses and Aunt Jemima figures, and worse, were present in white households. But there's a generation of African Americans who are now taking ownership of these demeaning artifacts. Thurbia Parker is one of them. Thurbia and his wife are among nearly 50,000 people who collect what's now referred to as black memorabilia. Thurbia, what sort of objects of hate do you have in your collection? I think most of us don't even realize these things exist.
Well, you're right, because most of these items were mostly found in white households, and they were marketed to the white people. In some cases, these derogatory logos were the only thing that was available. You see, during the early 19th century, most people, black and white, especially in the South, couldn't read and write. So they would send the kids to the store. I want you to get the pancake mixed with the mammy on it. I want you to get that cream of wheat with that Negro on it. So they identified what they were shopping for by the logos.
So just to give people an idea of the kind of products we're talking about, show me some of the things. You just brought a fraction of your collection, which is how large?
Oh, I have somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe about 2,500 pieces. And a lot of it is advertisement. Now, I take this Darkey toothpaste. A white British man came to America during the 1930s, and he saw a minstrel show. And he was so impressed on how these white actors looked in blackface and how their teeth just glowed. So when he went back to Britain, he came up with the idea for this Darkey toothpaste. And as you can see, the tube, it has a depiction of a black man in a top hat with this broad smile, all of those pearly whites showing. Well, when it became politically incorrect, they changed it from Darkey to Darling toothpaste. And today that toothpaste is still being manufactured in Hong Kong, and Colgate-Palmolive owns the product. Okay, so instead of using the N-word, I will use bigger. And you had the bigger hair tobacco. Later on, it was actually called bigger hair, but the same logo. We have Mammy's favorite brand, coffee, which came out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Uncle Ben's rice with a picture of a black man, as you can see, who was a maitre d' in a restaurant, and they took his picture. When I was growing up, I used to look at Uncle Ben on the rice, and I used to always think that a black man owned this, but that wasn't so. But Uncle Ben is in a transformation of changing their name from Uncle Ben to Chairman of the Board.
Really?
Yes.
Chairman of the Board Rice?
That's what they're in the process, gradually changing their name, but they're still using the same logo as we see today of Uncle Ben.
Why is aunt and uncle a racist term? What does it harken back to?
Well, let me look at aunt first. Now, aunt was always this law, die for you, do anything for you white people. And they were considered like a member of the family.
I mean, these were the names they gave to their favorite nanny African-American slaves?
That's correct. And the same thing with the word uncle. That favorite uncle who was that law servant, die for the white folks, do anything for them. And they was considered a member of the family. In some cases, their aunt and the uncle walked around with their chests out thinking they were better than anyone else.
So a lot of these products that you have are products that were marketed with these African-American characters to white folks because it was perceived in marketing that they made them feel comforted. Better.
Yes. And we had famous companies like Firestone Tire and Rubber. They made a sprinkling Sambo, the way you would stick the piece into the ground, hook the water hose to it, and it would spin around as it watered your lawn. You have the bigger banks, bigger Jolly Banks.
So that was the N-word bank?
That's right, the N-word bank. As I said earlier, I'm going to call it the bigger.
You mean yeah. People would say, here, honey, I just bought you for Christmas a bigger bank.
Yes, these bigger banks were used, the Jolly bigger banks were used, they were toys. They were manufactured for children. And you stick the coin in it, press the lever on the back, and it would raise the hand up and they would swallow the coin. And in some cases, the ears move and the eyes move. It was a toy that these kids grew up with playing with it, saving money.
shape of a caricature head of an African-American man?
Yes. Not only of the African-American man, they had the female version that they called Diana, and it worked the same way. And then they have the one called the Young Bigger Bank.
Do you think it was popular?
Sure. I mean, they had them where you could see the hair. Then they had them made with the formal top hats. They were very, very, very popular.
So how did you start into this? Did you wander into some piece one day in a store and thought, I can't believe I'm looking at this?
Well, it all started when my wife and I was living in New Jersey after I got discharged from the Army. And we would go up to Pennsylvania, and stopping in the antique shops didn't cost anything. And both of us was just curious about the past. And the very first items that I purchased were the Mammy Salt and Pepper Shakers, the Aunt Jemima, Uncle Moses. And even then, I was wondering, why am I buying this? And my wife was asking me the same thing. Why you keep buying this stuff? And as time went on, I began to actually look for certain items. Take a look at this alarm clock. It says Little Black Casper, the Friendly Spook. It has a black version of the ghost Casper, and people bought it. And you take a look at this particular outdoor thermometer. And at the bottom, it says, we sell black coal, but we treat you white. And this was a thermometer that they gave to their customers.
Let me see
and
this.
And sometimes it might have been an African-American that was delivering the oil.
We sell black coal, but we treat you white.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. And this company had African-American customers also. Okay. But you see, there was no conscience. It was no conscience when it came to how it make you feel. It was good business. Here I have a recipe booklet. It's the Old Dixie Recipes. But the thing of it is, they use the N-word when they have little stories at the end of every page. They use the N-word. They use the darky. They use coon. This page here has a recipe for rice and pineapples, rice flour waffles. Even has a recipe for mulatto rice. But at the caption at the bottom, they have a depiction of two black kids lying in bed. And it says, two little biggers lying in bed. One of them sick and the other one most dead. Call for the doctor, and the doctor said, feed them dockies some shortening bread.
Oh, no.
Okay. So they was very, had a lot of poetry to go along with these stories. And this particular page has boiled custards, ambrosia, southern battered pudding. And at the bottom, it has the mammy with her head wrapped with the bandana holding a baby in her hand. And it says, there was a little Alabama coon. Ah, oh, he ain't been born very long. Old them took him down to the cotton fields, and he rolled them and tumbled in the sun. So it was always these little stories. It's just like when kids would go to school and they would read the story of Little Black Sambo.
Is your collection controversial? Is it controversial with either white people or African Americans?
Yes. First of all, a lot of people didn't have any idea the impact that these artifacts had on all of America. I can remember when I was in an antique shop down in North Carolina, and I frequented the shop quite often. And the owner of the shop said to me one day, I have something I think you might be interested in, but I don't keep it in the shop. He said, the next time you come down, call me the night before, and I'll bring it to the shop. So a few weeks went by, and I decided, well, I'm going to go down there this weekend. And I called him, and when I got to the antique shop, and I'm looking at other things, and he said, well, here's what I got. And he opened up a little suitcase, and he had KKK robes in it. And I said, what the hell you think I want with that? And he said, and he apologized to me. He zipped the bag back up, and I came on home, but it bothered me. I said, how can I tell the story not only of African-American history, but of America's history, and leave out the KKK? So about a month later, I called him up, and I went back down there to his shop in Carolina, and I purchased it. You know, it really blew my mind. But on the other hand, you cannot tell the story and leave out the Klan, because that was the first terrorism group that was homegrown here in America, and it was homegrown to affect black people.
And yet, as you were starting to say, I think that both African-American families and white families, many of them would recoil from the material that you have here. White families, I suppose, would say, we don't want to reflect on a really terrible part of our history. And Black families would say the same thing.
Yes, and I've had response from both. And my response to that is, this is history. You should embrace history, learn from history. And if you start to hide from it, whether the saying goes something like, if you don't, you're destined to repeat it. So, yes, it is a painful part of our history. And one of the reasons being is there are a lot of white people that during the civil rights movement spit on Black people and that are still living. And there are a lot of Black people that were spit on and are still living. And they can't tell their grandchildren or children and great grandchildren that this happened, that I did the spitting or I was spit on, because they're afraid of how their children or grandchildren may look at them. See, a lot of times truth about history don't come out until they're dead and gone.
You give frequent talks on this subject and show and tell demonstrations of your collection.
Yes, I can remember when I was at Hampton University, I gave an exhibit and a lecture, and I asked one of the students, what can you tell me about Mammy? And she gave the typical depiction of Mammy as being very voluptuous, very dark, with the bandana around her head and being a good cook and all of those things. But the thing that really shocked me is they had no idea about this part of Jim Crow.
They didn't realize it was a negative image, you mean?
They didn't realize. I've had people that I've done exhibits and they will say, oh, this is cute.
African-American people will say, oh, it's cute.
Yeah. Even white people also. But they don't have any idea that the impact that this had upon the races. When you do an exhibit like this, you cannot allow people just to walk through and look at it, because they will get the wrong impression. There was a time that African-Americans, along with some white people also, they would buy these artifacts to literally to destroy them.
Oh, really?
Yes. And now is to embrace our history. Regardless of how painful it is, you should always embrace your history.
Who are some of the big name collectors now?
Oh, well, the biggest name out there is Oprah Winfrey. You have Whoopi Goldberg. You have Brooke Avery from Fresh Prince. Even Mike Tyson collects slave shackles.
What do you think is the ultimate destination for your collection? Have you thought about bequeathing it to a museum?
I would love for colleges and universities to take this collection and use it to educate. If you really want to know racism, you need to take a look at what racism is all about. I think you have a much better understanding if you can actually see it.
It's kind of like suicide, though. People are always afraid if you show some young innocent mind this kind of depravity and racism, that it will give it ideas.
I tell you what, Sarah, I have in my collection a lynching of a Black man. And children are at this lynching with smiles on their face. White children, of course. And when you look at racism, they took pictures of lynchings, put them on postcards, and mailed them across the country to family and friends. So when you talk about the effects, when you can take a young mind and show them something and say, this is wrong, then you teach a lesson.
Thurbia Parker, I'm so grateful to you for talking with me today.
Thank you.
And with good reason.
Thank you for good reasons.
Thurbia Parker often lectures to university students about the history of the racist artifacts in his collection. If you'd like to see some of the items, there's a slideshow on our website, withgoodreasonradio.org. Support for With Good Reason is provided by the Virginia 529 College Savings Plan, offering 4 tax-advantaged higher education savings plans for public and private technical schools, community colleges, and universities around the country and even the world. More information at virginia529.com. Additional support is provided by Maya Restaurant in Midtown Charlottesville. Maya serves a local menu in the Southern style, made from scratch daily with fresh seasonal ingredients from local farms. Live music on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights. More information at mayarestaurant.com. You're listening to With Good Reason. Elliot Majerzik, Thomas Pierce, and Kelly Libby are our associate producers. Andrew Windham is our executive producer. Jeannie Palin handles listener services. We had help this week from Perry Smith of WHRV. With Good Reason is produced by the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Visit us at withgoodreasonradio.org or like us on Facebook. For a free copy of the show on CD, call 877-451-5098. I'm Sarah McConnell. Thanks for listening.